hear me?
Hey, how are you?
Can you see me and hear me all right?
I can see you and hear you.
All right, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
I hadn't talked to another person earlier in the week or last week, I would have never had this opportunity.
Right. How did that go with Mr. Monroe?
He was great. I told a story at the beginning of it. We go to M3 every year, and I had went to the restroom. I had saw Paul walking around. I wanted to go up to him, see if I could get his autograph, see if I could get him sign something. And he got out of my line of vision, but we were sitting there, standing there in the bathroom, and I look over, and he's standing right beside me in the bathroom.
Oh.
But he had already walked out and was gone before I could ever catch up to him. But M3 was the first time I ever saw, it was just Terry and Paul, at M3. But they played, all the XYZ songs, that everybody wants to hear. It was
Yeah.
great to see, great to actually hear him after what 35 years of being a fan. So.
Awesome. Well, good.
You're an awesome guitarist. I love your sound. I love, people associate XYZ with the first time they saw Inside Out on Headbangers Ball. That's the first time I ever knew what you guys were,
Right.
But you had so many, there were so many great songs on that album that weren't of video visual of it. I mean, you had Maggie.
Yeah.
After the Rain is just a great song, just Terry and the instrument you playing,
Yeah.
it'll move you if you listen to it good enough,
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
And
Those
then
were
we get in,
great
and
birthday.
then we get into Face Down in the Gutter, and you guys were a whole lot heavier on that album,
Yes.
and you're just an amazing guitarist, and I'm a huge fan.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. That's very kind of you. Thank you so much.
What do you? I understand you have a band called Diggs and Company now with Paul.
That is correct. Yes. We released a video probably 2 weeks ago of a cover of When the Levee Breaks. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Just as soon as I got off with Paul, I told him, I said, I'm gonna go to YouTube right now and go watch it. I think it's great. It's
Oh,
great.
great. Thank you.
Is
Yeah,
that
it's fun.
your main thing you work on now?
Yes. So we got together. We started this project about March. So it'd be around 7 months or so. And when we first started, we said, no pressure. Let's not judge. Let's just do some cover songs. Just
Right.
get to know each other. And we started naming off all these different covers from so many different genres and styles. And so I kind of stepped up and I said, let's keep it simple. It seems like most of the covers are from the 70s. So
Right.
let's stick with 70s rock covers. And
There
everybody's
you
like,
go.
cool, let's just do that. So we started that route and we accumulated at that time, about six or seven of them. Next thing you know, we had about 10 of them. But we were like, let's try moving towards originals. Let's start writing. Everybody was kind of getting antsy to do that, to see what we really had. And so yeah, we've been writing. We've probably got about 10 originals as well. So, they're in various stages right now, but we're working on the first one to be released that should be released pretty soon, as a follow-up to When the Levee Breaks. So I'm excited for that. So we're in the early stages of putting that all together.
I think it's great when bands do cover songs because you get used to listening to the Led Zeppelin version of it. But when
Right.
a band, when a band plays it and puts their own influence into it,
Yes.
you kind of listen to it in a whole different way.
Yeah, it takes on a whole new
Right.
transition. Yeah.
Because I
And
know there's a, go ahead.
oh no, I was just going to say, Led Zeppelin, from the time I was a child, discovering music has been big part of who I am. I just am a huge Jimmy Page fan. And so, yeah, I've always known the song as a Led Zeppelin song, but it was actually written, a little trivia, by Memphis Minnie and Kansas Joe McCoy back in 1927 about the great floods of the Mississippi. And they actually had a chance to record that song in 29. So I felt it necessary to include them, in the journey as well, because it's very significant, and it was a devastating flood, and it, it's always going on, every year there's some sort of natural disaster, hurricane, sure, or whatever. So, yeah, very significant. If you listen to the original, which we included in the video,
right,
tagged it a little bit. Very, very, very significant, very important.
One song comes to mind, Heart has a video on YouTube where they sing Stairway to Heaven, and Jimmy Page's son is the guitar, he's playing the guitar in the song, and Jason Bonham is playing the drums, and it's just, my wife will watch it and she'll start crying. It's just neat to hear how someone else puts a different, not necessarily a spin, because they stay true to the song, but just like listening to someone else sing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Their soul comes out in it. And
sure.
Yeah. And you hear, it may be exactly like the original as far as the progression goes and the tempo and the key, but it's just, hey, this is how I feel it. This is what you did to me. Thank you for giving me this gift. And here I want to give it back.
And it's neat to see, Jimmy Page up in the balcony, and he's weeping.
I saw that. So it was the Kennedy Center.
Yes, that's what it was.
Robert Plant would look like he was in tears at the end of that. He was really teared
he
up.
He was moved by the song. He was proud of his son.
Yes, absolutely.
That brings a whole new life to something that you did over probably 40 years ago.
Yeah, it touched on so many different things. Just that version you're talking about. I remember Jason Bonham going going like this and pointing to those guys.
Right.
Thank you guys. I love you. You're my family.
Right.
Beautiful.
That's what music is all about. That's why I'm a huge, and if it offends you, I'm sorry, but I'm a huge hair metal fan, glam metal. I get a lot of flack for saying that, but not everybody wore spandex. But if you had big hair back in the 80s,
yeah.
The trouble is, everybody got categorized into a stereotype or a persona.
They did.
I was talking to Jason McMaster this week, the singer for Dangerous Toys.
Yes.
They're a Texas band, and he's like, well, we weren't really hair metal. I said, no, you weren't. But when you saw Metal Edge, or you heard the word hair metal, you guys were in hair metal.
Exactly.
But whatever, he said he called it stomp rock, which I agree. Okay. Dangerous Toys was probably stomp rock, because you stomped your feet when you listened to the music,
Right, right.
So Terry and Pat were already had XYZ, correct?
They did. They had XYZ even before they came here. So it originated in France.
Right.
And I think they did an album with another drummer and another guitar player. I'm not sure their names, but I remember listening to it back then. And so they kind of brought that whole thing, the two of them, to California. Where it went through a few different members to finally get to Paul and myself.
Well, how did you come into play were you already in, or were you already in California? Were you already in another band?
No, actually, I'm from Connecticut, so I was in Connecticut.
Okay.
I was in a band, as a matter of fact. And I said to the guys in the band, I really want more, and I want to try California. And a couple of them, were, you know, they gave me their blessing. They were like, yeah, that's great. You go, you know, do what you got to do. And a couple of people said, you know, you're in for a rude awakening. You know, this is California.
Right.
And, you know, so whatever, I kind of, you know, did what I had to do and ended up moving to California. But before I did, I met a mutual friend who knew of Terry and Pat and said, look, it, here's their phone number. Give them a call. They may be looking for a guitar player. And that's how that started.
So that was a big difference from Connecticut to Hollywood.
Oh yeah.
A whole nother world, I guess you could say.
I think the whole state of Connecticut is just about the size of Hollywood, maybe.
I know, right? Yeah. I think my whole podcast is about my love for the music, but you know, the Sunset Strip always intrigues me.
Yeah.
You just, what you see, clips of things on YouTube. And of course you had the decline of Western civilization, which gave you a kind of a inside view of what it was like to be at Grisari's or,
yeah,
you know, the Whiskey a Go-Go. But the whole movement just fascinates me. In a small little stretch, you had so many clubs,
yeah,
you had so many bands, you know, just trying to make it big. And unfortunately, a lot of them never did, you know.
Yes. You know, Jeremy, it was at the time, being so young, you know, mm-hmm. and at that time it was like, okay, this is going on, you know, this is what it is. But when you look back at it today, you're like, wow, what a movement that was.
Yes.
It was pretty heavy duty. I mean, it was like clockwork. You know, as soon as, you know, it happened during the week, but it got, you know, real full come around Thursday, Friday, Saturday, packed cars, people just up and down both sides of the street. And, you know, the clubs, you had the Whiskey, you had the Roxy, you had the Rainbow, you know, you had Gazzari's, and you know, anybody who was famous would show up at any time, and you would run into these people, and it was really very surreal, especially coming from, you know, a small little place like Connecticut on the other side of the country. So and you know, you dream that, hey, you know, one day I would like to see something like that. And it actually happened. So I'm very, very blessed, very grateful. It was just a wonderful experience. Poison was just coming up. Guns N' Roses were out on the street, you know, passing out flyers, or back then it was pay to play, so you had to sell tickets.
Right.
You know, Warrant, just and on and on and on. And these people, you pass them, you know, on the street, hey, what's up? And then there was a famous place called Rock and Roll Denny's. It was a Denny's down further.
I've never heard of Rock and Roll Denny's.
Yeah, a Denny's restaurant, you know, all
wow.
night. And they ended up calling it like Rock and Roll Denny's. But yeah, everybody would meet up there about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning for pie and coffee or whatever, you know, you wanted. And so, you know, the party kept on, you know. So, yeah, just really fun times, really.
You know, you get an image in your head about the whole Hollywood scene, and it's, you know, you kind of get the image of it's cutthroat. Everybody's crawling over everybody's backs, this, that, and the other. But, you know, the more artists that I talked to from that decade, it really wasn't that way, because you go to a club and there may be a five bill band. Okay. Okay.
Right.
Your amp just went out. So you go borrow an amp from, say, Jerry Dixon from Warrant, or your microphone stopped working, and you go borrow, you know, the more I hear about that, the more it was, you were out to get a record deal. I understand that, but it was more like a brotherhood.
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways.
Yes.
You know, I think that's great.
Oh, it is. And, you know, I mean, that just shows you, I mean, everybody, I really don't know that. I think there was more, what I'm trying to say is there was probably more people that came from out of state to try to do the same thing. Yes. So everybody was kind of like in this whole thing together. Everybody was just, you know, hoping for the best and just cheering everybody on. You know, there was a lot of great talent out there at that time. And, you know, it's funny. I have no idea what it's like today. I heard it's completely unlike it used to be. I don't know. Do you?
I talked to a gentleman. His name is Justin, and he's in a band called Cruella de Vil. And he's recently moved from that area. But he says, you know, the clubs, they still have people there. You know, they're trying to do a resurgence of, you know, there's bands out there now that sound just like a Faster Pussycat, that sound just like a XYZ, that sound just like a Guns N' Roses. You know, they're trying to make their mark on it. But you see a lot of them I've talked to there. You see advertisements, and it may be a year from now, but they're going to play the Whiskey A Go Go again 35 years later. But this music is trying, I think, is trying to make a resurgence, but I don't think Hollywood will never be what it was in the 80s. And I think for it served its purpose. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Look at what it launched. Yes, in the sky was the limit at one minute, and the next thing you know, you hear Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, and the whole thing just comes to a crashing halt. But I honestly, in my heart, believe a lot of the bands that tried to squeeze in there around 88 or 89, they took the bull by the horns. They rode it as hard as they could because they knew
it was going to
come crashing down. It's a shame it did, but I don't think it would be what it is today if it hadn't happened the way it did. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah. You know, I remember the time very well, you know, and unfortunately we were at the tail end of that. 88, 89. I think the first record came out 89. You know, I mean, it just happens when it happens, you know. It just tells me we weren't ready prior to that. You know, that was our time. And unfortunately, the door wasn't all the way open as it would have been in the past. It was starting to close a little bit, so we had to sneak in. But we didn't get too much time to advertise the product, so to speak.
Sure.
Because, you know, Seattle was that was such a force. You know, I mean, the big four, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
That was a force, you know, so that had to do what it was going to do. And it changed. And, you know, just like as big as that was, it had to come to an end as well and move on to another, you know, chapter. So
I think that the 80s era, even the grunge era, I wasn't a grunge fan, but I did like, you know, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains. I mean, that guy's crazy. Yeah. He is such a great guitarist.
Absolutely.
You know,
great
and
sound too.
I enjoy listening to, you know, a lot of his music. Even when he did a solo album that came out, I went out and bought it because I just liked the way he sounds. I didn't necessarily like grunge.
Right.
But I believe the 80s era and the grunge era, after that, there really wasn't an era. Does that make sense? It was just music was either pop, it was rap, it was, you know, you have the bands that are heavy, but it wasn't a grunge or a hair metal. It was I'm getting into an era that I don't, Good Charlotte was a band.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So we're talking, you know,
it was still rock, but it wasn't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, mid 90s, perhaps.
Yes.
You know, a lot of diversity starts to come out, and a sort of a melting pot where
there you go.
You know, now you had you had the computers and, doing it from home technology kicking in, and then YouTube and all that kind of stuff, was starting to happen. And there was so much diversity where they showcased so many different styles of music all at the same time. It
Right.
wasn't just a group of rock bands
Yes, exactly.
started to
Yes.
stem out into mixing more of a Nashville sound, more of
Yeah.
a whatever sound with this. And so it was really I think of it as a really cool thing as well. And that music is going to do that. And if you look back, at when we were kids, I mean, that whole thing had to end too. The 70s rock
Right, yes.
into the 80s rock into the
Right.
90s rock, and it just seems like every decade you got a new kind of sound coming out.
But I got in the truck when I was young. You'd get in your vehicle and you would be on a classic rock station,
Yeah.
and you would listen to Led Zeppelin, you would listen to Molly Hatchet, you would
Yeah.
listen to Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yes.
That was classic rock. So I get in the truck a couple of weeks ago, same classic rock station that's always been in Raleigh, North Carolina,
Yeah.
and get in there, and I actually heard Shout at the Devil on a classic rock station here in Raleigh.
There you go.
So I'm thinking, well, I guess I'm getting older, whether I want to say I am or not. So now classic rock is Poison, Warrant,
Yeah.
Heart. That's classic rock now. So it's,
Yeah. And
you
then,
know.
pretty soon, when you think about it, those newer bands from the 90s are going to be classic rock. Three,
Yes, they
Three
will.
Doors Down, they're going to be
There
classic
you go. Yeah.
rock. Evanescence, they're going to be classic rock.
Right. Yeah. So, but that just it just goes to show, we're sitting here talking about music. Music is so great. On Friday nights, sometimes me and my wife will just cut on Sirius Satellite Radio on the app on the television, and
Yeah.
we're into a station called Yacht Rock right now.
I've heard of that.
And they but well they play America, they play Bread.
Oh, okay. Yes, gotcha.
Kind of mellow
Yeah.
rock tunes, and I remember hearing these songs when I was, because I was born in 71. So when I was old enough to remember songs, I remember these songs playing on the radio.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, my parents, I was raised on the Platters.
Yeah.
The 50s, 60s type music, because that's what my parents. And it's
Yes.
funny, you kind of listen to what, in my opinion, I don't have any brothers and sisters, so I listen to what my parents listen to. I have a
Right.
25-year-old daughter that loves hair metal just as much as I do, because when she was about two or three and could sit in the car seat, she was listening to XYZ, Heaven's Edge, Lillian Axe, you name it, that's what she was
Right.
listening to. But
Right.
my point I was trying to make, I talked to a lot of people, and if they had brothers, they listened to their brothers' albums,
Right.
and that's what inspired them to the music they followed, and the sound that kind of followed with them. So it just goes to show you that music influences our life every day.
Oh yeah. And I love so many different genres of music. It's not even funny. I mean, I go from, 50s jazz all the way to Patsy Cline, all the
Right.
way to Black Sabbath to a Cuban,
Sure.
whatever band. If it's music, if it grooves, if it feels good, if it does something, I love it. So I'm a big fan of all different kinds of stuff.
So when let's just say when the train stopped with hair metal,
Yeah.
and you XYZ released an album after Face Down in the Gutter.
After Hungry, yes.
After Hungry, yes. Were you on that album?
There was two albums. One of them was a live album, and of course that was me. The other one was Forbidden Demos. That was me and, you know, some other people in the past. But then I heard that they did, I guess, officially do an XYZ3, and I was not on that, no.
Well, what did you do after, what did you start doing after you pretty much were not in XYZ? Because I tried to Google some of the things you did after XYZ, and I can't find a whole lot.
Yeah, there's
as
not
far
much.
As albums and stuff, there's not a whole lot of information about you on the, and that's fine too, to, you know,
You know, basically at that time, I was, you know, I didn't have YouTube, I didn't have social media to let me know that there were people out there who really wanted, you know, that music was carrying on in the background, but I didn't know, you know, because I didn't have the capabilities at the time. I was kind of burnt out from hard rock scene and hearing what was coming down the pipe. I was like, okay, that's cool, but it's not for me. So at that time, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to do what I always wanted to do. I'm going to play blues. And I went down the blues rabbit hole for 25 years of just going to school and learning from the greats and getting to know the language and the people behind it. And, you know, I just spent so many years just studying and going through different vintage guitars and vintage amps, trying to find the sounds and playing in some local bands and doing that whole thing. But yeah, just a big blues fanatic. And I always was, I had the good fortune of when I first started playing guitar back in Connecticut, one of my teachers turned me on to B.B. King and turned me on to Albert Collins and opened my eyes to the Allman Brothers and, you know, said, this is blues and it's all different kinds of blues, but this is blues and this is important to know. And I fell in love with it. I was just, you know, God, this is beautiful. This is pure guitar music to me. And of course, you know, we did what we did with the XYZ thing. There wasn't really a format that we had to kind of incorporate blues. It wasn't that sort of movement.
Right.
So yeah, it was something I always wanted to do. And I felt, you know, at that time it was really, you know, it was just the right time again to just, you know, kind of go down that whole thing and, you know, learn how to play slide guitar and just get into all that. And what a great ride it's been, because it has reshaped my playing. It gave me new life, new ways of thinking about, you know, playing lines and stuff like that. So yeah, really big blues fan.
Well, you're not the first person I've talked to that's kind of had the same story. I've talked to quite a few guys that, you know, this is what we played because this is what made us money. You know, this is what we went out on tour for. But when I got out of this, you know, I met up with a couple of guys that I was still in contact with over the years, and we just put a little band together. And like Steve Blaze from Lillian Axe is an example. I don't know if you know who. No,
yeah.
Steve, but he's one of my favorite guitarists too. I can listen to that cat play. He just, you can tell by someone's facial expressions. You know, when I was a little kid, I was always like, this guy looks like he's about to cry while he's playing his guitar. But now I understand what was coming out of that person's spirit and heart was coming through what he was playing. And Steve's a lot like that. And when I talk to him, he's like, well, me and the lead singer for, you know, Lillian Axe, we just go out with an acoustic. I go out with an acoustic guitar and he sings, and we just play old 50 songs. We play 60 songs. We play America. We play Bread. And he's like, I enjoy doing that more than anything I have ever done in my life. And I might make $50 doing it.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I mean, you reconnect with your youth,
Yes.
because I
Yeah.
used to listen to all those songs too, and I love all, the Little Richards and the Rockin' Robins and
Yes.
those type of songs and Bread and Crosby, Stills
Yes.
and Nash
Yeah.
and it's wonderful to go back and to hear all those songs. You appreciate them a lot more when you're older than you do when you're younger,
Sure.
because you're kind of influenced by, of course, Van Halen comes out and they blow the roof
Right.
off everything, and
Oh, of course.
I don't want to hear anything else but Eddie at that point. So, but I mean, just so many people, they influence you in so many different ways. And going back to, the roots, whether it be blues or whether it be James Taylor or Carly Simon, I'm our Carole King, stuff
Right.
like that. Listening to that music is also beautiful too. And so yeah, it's just like you said at the beginning, music is just so powerful. It's just such a language that connects with you and your soul, actually. It's very, very beautiful thing.
Well, can you imagine a world without music?
No, I could not. Absolutely no.
It would be a very dull world, wouldn't it?
I remember at the time too, I think we were into the Hungry album, so it was the second record, but I was such a big fan of Stevie Ray Vaughan that I even mentioned to the guys. I said, "You know what I'd like to try on the next one, if presuming that there was going to be a next one, I'd like to, kind of put the humbucker, the down and get a Strat single
Right.
coil, kind of go down that road." And everybody in the band was like, "Nah,
Nah.
that's not going to work for us. It's probably not a good idea. It's great that you think that way, but so anyway, my point is, I just wanted to try different things always, different kinds of stuff, and I've always been a big jazz blues fan for forever and ever, and nothing wrong with rock and roll. Love a good old rock song as well.
Well, did the record companies de determine? I've never really asked anybody this, but did the record companies determine what your sound was going to be like? I mean,
No,
no.
no, no. They had already put their chips in
Right.
when they heard you, which is
Okay.
why you got signed. It's like, okay, we're gonna go all in on you guys. We like you guys. We like your sound. So they would. I remember back in the day, there was an A&R guy for a record
Okay.
company that would show
Yeah.
up, and his job was, just that—to listen in and. So yeah, they do like to talk to you from time to time about things like that, and when they hear something they question it, and when they hear something they like, they don't. And but for the most part, they left us alone. We kind of just did our thing. And
Well, I remember when I first, like I say, when I was in high school, what you did on Saturday night was, you made sure you were home by 11 o'clock so you could cut MTV on and watch the Headbangers Ball.
right.
Like I said, the first time I ever saw you guys, what your the band was all about, how your movements, how your mannerisms, and all, of course, inside out. But I had read about you in Metal Edge, and I remember very well. I used to read Metal Edge from cover to cover, and I would read Rip magazine from cover to cover, just learning anything I could about the bands, you guys, any bands they would put. But I remember distinctly before you guys came out, they have a strong docking sound. Mark sounds a whole lot like George Lynch. Well, I don't think you sound like George Lynch personally. I think you got your own distinct sound.
Thank
You
you.
hear when you hear George Lynch, you know it's George Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
Hear Eddie Van Halen, you know who it is without even looking at the screen.
Oh, yeah.
But my point was is how was it working with Don Dokken? You hear a lot of bad things about him, and you hear a lot of good things about him, but
Yeah.
he's a very intelligent, smart
Yes.
man for what
Yes.
he's done all these years.
Yes. And he was awesome. Absolutely awesome with us. Yeah, I had the greatest time. I remember when he came to see us, to we showcase for him because we were looking for, you know, a producer. And I remember that night he showed up and he said, yeah, he goes, I want to do this. And it was like, wow, that was huge. Because here I am being in Connecticut, not that far back. Right. And
right.
listening to Don and George and
yeah.
go, wow, man, these guys are great, you know? And here I am, you know, having a chance to work with them. And Don, he's so intelligent when it comes to music. He, you know, he really, he just takes his time. He knows what's right. You know, he knows what to do, what not to do. I mean, he's just got great advice. Fun to work with. You know, of course, his track record with Doc and all those great albums they did.
Oh, yeah.
Just awesome. So yeah, I mean, such a treat to be able to work with them. You know, it was a lot of fun.
Well, I know. I've got pretty much all of Dawkins' albums. You see, I pin my albums to the wall back there. I told my wife, I was like, I'm going to create me a background. I'm going to pin my albums to the wall.
There you
so
go.
I would have a, you know, a background, because I was always the person, and I'll put you guys in that category. I was always the person that liked the underrated hair metal bands. You had your Poisons, you had your Warrants, you had your Dawkins and Motley Crue. I liked XYZ. I liked Hurricane Alice. I liked
yes.
Babylon AD.
Yes.
These are the bands, and when everybody was going to the tape store to buy Girls, 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 I was going to buy XYZ or who, and they're like, I never heard of these guys before. It's because I read Metal Edge magazine and I recognized I would look to see if some of these people I saw towards the back of Metal Edge were actually going to be on MTV. And sure enough, there you guys were. But those are the bands that I gravitated to. And a lot of times, the only times, because when you're in high school, when you got to pay $8.99 for a cassette tape, chances are you're going to buy one that you saw on MTV.
Right. But,
you know, back then, you depended on, you know, Joey buying the new LA Guns and Timmy buying the new Motley Crue, and you go to each other's house and you put a Memorex tape in there and you dub it.
Right.
That's how music spread in the area that I lived in at the time.
Yeah, me too. Check these guys out. I made you a copy of the cassette.
Yeah. You gave you cassette tape with four or five different songs from different bands on there or whatever, you know, that you just happened to. But I talked to Paul about this, and, you know, we agreed on it. You know, back then, that was the ultimate way to, that's the only way you had to spread music.
Yeah.
You
That
know,
it was either word of mouth, buying an album or a cassette
right.
or an 8-track, if you want to go back a little.
Yeah, there you go. But
yeah.
Nowadays, you know, you could sit here right now and play a guitar solo and put it on Instagram or TikTok, and 2 million people have seen it in 2 seconds.
Yes.
Where back then, you know, the tape might wind up 6 months later and 15 people have actually listened to the tape and recopied it. So, you know, and people came in concert around here, not all the time, but, you know, you stood in line at Ticketmaster. You didn't go on your phone and get in a queue. You know, you actually stood in line and you got a paper ticket when you walked up there.
Yeah.
You know, and it was fun to going to concerts back then. And we actually had two small places here. We had the Flaming Mug and the Switch.
Yeah.
One was in Raleigh and one was in Fayetteville. And
yeah.
I remember that there were so many big, great bands that went through those little small places.
Right, I bet.
You know, I remember in high school, we went and saw a band called Cold Sweat, and the band Sabotage was actually opening for them in a place that's about half as big, a little bit bigger than the room I'm sitting in now. You know, but that was what the movement was all about. You know, every Friday and Saturday there was a couple of bands. Like I said, it was some big names that came through there. Rat, Dokken, big names. You guys may have played it at one time. I'm not sure. I'd have to research it,
Yeah, we went through we went through the Carolinas a few times. I can't remember the names of the venues, but yes, we definitely went through there. As a kid growing up in Connecticut, which is kind of strange because it's so, up there East Coast wise, Southern rock was huge, and I was a huge Southern rock fan. So, Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet and, ZZ Top and the Outlaws and, on and on, the Allman Brothers and just on and on. One of my, I love the Charlie Daniels Band, but one of my favorite bands even today is the Marshall Tucker Band. And I know that's
Oh,
that
yeah.
from the backyard right there.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
God, Toy Caldwell, one of my favorite guitar players. I still try to emulate Toy Caldwell today. I listen to the Marshall Tucker Band so much. To me, they were like a Southern version of the band Chicago. They had the brass section, they
Right.
had this sort of jazzy thing, they had this rock thing, they had this gospel thing. And of course, Doug Gray, the vocals are just like, oh my God. Yeah, I think I've seen Marshall Tucker back in the day like 4 or 5 times when they'd come through town. So
Right.
anyway, yeah, I remember being in the Carolinas because of them, just one of my favorites.
Yeah, down here, Southern rock, just my memory as a younger person, it was Marshall Tucker, it was Molly Hatchet. Charlie Daniels is, I believe, from North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken, or South Carolina one.
Okay.
He's close, was from close to here. I thought he was lived up toward the mountains of North Carolina, but I may be wrong. But yeah, those are the best. Lynyrd Skynyrd, I mean, you see Lynyrd Skynyrd stickers in the back of people's windows or bumper stickers even to this day, But that's a
No.
good homage to a Southern atmosphere, a Southern genre that
Yeah.
people still, Lynyrd Skynyrd comes to Walnut Creek here in Raleigh every year, and it sells out.
Yeah.
People still love to come see it, and they wear their old regalia and drink a couple of drinks and hoot and holler,
Yeah.
and it's fun. That's what it's all about,
Absolutely. Yeah, that's good. That's good music. I love that territory. Northern Florida, Alabama, Georgia, all into the Carolinas, that it just there's something about that part of the country that puts out the kind of music that's obviously different from the West Coast, but I've connected to it so much more, there's something about it.
Well, you know what? There's nothing like. I've never lived in Connecticut. Where do you live at? Where do you live at now?
I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay. I've never been to Albuquerque. I've never been to Connecticut, and I've never been on the West Coast. But I'll tell you, I've lived in the South for 53 years. I got the Southern accent. I'm a Southern boy, and there's nothing like living in the South. But other people can say, well, there's nothing like living in Connecticut, or there's nothing like living on the West Coast. But it's just the South is just a little bit laid back, more paced than most. And a lot of people move to the South because they like the culture and the laid backness and the not necessarily slowness, but you still have tobacco fields here. You have soybean fields. I can every morning, I can't wait to get up because I can open my blinds where I'm at, and there may be five deer walking across the yard. Or I put corn in the backyard and feed the deer, and there might be five or six of them out there. And you can
Yeah,
walk out of the porch, and they won't even run from you because they're hungry. They want to eat. So.
No, that's beautiful. It really is. That appeals to me. It always has. I love the Southern lifestyle so much.
I'm so glad you still make music. Like I say, I love XYZ. I can listen to both albums, and I love every song. You are a great, great guitar player, and you are a great man from just sitting here talking to you. And you know
Likewise.
what? You took a 25-year hiatus and you played blues, you got into something that you love doing and you learned. And
Yeah.
I think that's great that you got away from what you did for years, hard rock, hair metal, whatever you want to call it, and you started playing blues and you enjoy it. And I'm so glad you and Paul have gotten together
Oh, me too.
and you
Yes.
got a project going on. And I hope you know, Paul said, I don't know if we're going to tour or not. We got to get a record first. And then maybe we might just go play some places. He's like, I really don't want to do that get back on the road thing again and have to do that. But local places, close places to be able to play our
Yeah.
music. He said that sounds like a, you know, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet. You know, we're at the crawling stages right now. So
Sure.
once we get our legs, we'll figure out what we got to do next. But it's been really fun working with these guys. Lee is from London. Lee Small, the singer, he's
Right.
from London. So we've never even met in person.
Oh, really? Wow.
Ever met in person, and we communicate, you know, through texting, or we talk on the phone. And of course, there's a 7 hour difference in
Yes.
time, so we work around that. But I come up with something, and you know, send it out to these guys, and Lee sends it back to me with a vocal on it and a lyric, and I'm like, wow, man, that's fantastic. You know, he just kind of reads my mind. He knows.
Sure.
You know what, we started to try to get to know each other, and we're starting to get to know each other. So we've got a lot of good original material coming out pretty soon.
35 years ago, did you ever think four people can be in four different places at one time and make a song?
No.
It's crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nuts. I mean, everything we have not, we do everything through like a Dropbox account or
Sure.
one of those.
Yeah.
We
Right.
we just send files to each other, and
Yeah.
everybody does their thing, and it ends up, you know, it comes back, and we mix it up, and there you go, we're done. It's like, wow, that's crazy. You know, I mean, back in the day, right, doing all those videos, being on scene, you know, on location. And the cost of, you know,
Oh, yeah.
$250,000 to do a rock video. You know, these days they're shooting them on their iPhone, and they got a green screen behind you, and
Yeah.
popping you somewhere in another
Right.
world, and the whole band is together, and it's like,
Yeah.
wow, man, it's just technology is amazing.
And you know, the technology that you have nowadays to make a video per se. I know I was talking to David Reese. He was in Bangalore Choir and he sang in a set for one album. But anyway, he said, you know, he said, you know, you sign that record contract and you think you got it made, but it's like a slice of pie. This
Yeah.
person's got a slice. All right. Then, you know, everybody wants to make a video. Okay. You had a video that cost you $300,000, but you got to sell so many albums to recoup that $300,000 that you spent on that. He's like, but now, I downloaded a program on my computer that I pay $19.95 a month for, and I can put four people in something at one time, like we're in the same room, and it cost me $19.99, and I don't owe anybody nothing.
I know.
Great.
Isn't that nuts?
That's technology for you. That's the age we live in, whether we like it or not. But you know what? The good
Yeah.
old days are good too when you're sitting there in a room. In a sound booth recording a drum track, or you know, you're recording your guitar tracks in a room and you got to record your vocals, but you're all together and you get tired of each other and you fuss and you argue and you know, those were good days too, because there's some great music came out of those days as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, all those people who went through all that stuff, you know, I think it appeals to this generation as well. I mean, they like to know what was it like, you know, back when Hendrix was, you know, in the
Yeah.
studio, or, you know,
Right.
Zeppelin was on the road, or whatever. So, yeah, there was it had to happen. It was very, very significant, all those things. And who knows, if they had the technology back then, maybe we wouldn't have these great songs that we think of them, for,
Yeah, but if you had that technology 30 years ago, you wouldn't be able to put a piece of vinyl on a turntable and hear the cracks and the pops and see just how amazing a vinyl record sounds as opposed to something I just downloaded on my iPhone and I'm playing it through my computer. There's a world of difference in that.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of depth to it, isn't there? There's something that it's just magical.
Well, sir, I know you're a busy man, and I do. This is the only band that I've actually talked to all four members of the band. I feel like I accomplished something. You know,
Awesome.
I talked to Paul week before last, and I talked to Terry that same week. I talked to Pat a couple of months ago, and now I've talked to you. So let's see, what do they call it? A hat trick in hockey? I
Yeah,
pulled a hat trick and I actually got to talk to all four of you. And thank you for great memories, great music. You know,
thank
I
you.
can't wait to see how Diggs and Company goes, what happens with you guys. And
Thank you.
I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you asking me to. This has been a lot of fun. Very nice.
I hope you had a good time. I really did, because I have enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I love connecting, man. This is awesome. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And God bless you, sir, and everything you do. And I do appreciate your time.
Thank you. You too, my friend.
You take care. Tell Paul I said hello.
I will.
All right. Bye-bye, sir.
Bye now.